WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Today is sentencing day for Brian Koberger, the man who has pleaded guilty to murdering four University of Idaho students in late 2022. House Speaker Mike Johnson closing proceedings and sending members of the House home early as cries grow louder for more transparency in the release of the full Jeffrey Epstein files. Speaker Johnson.
We're not going to allow them to engage in that charade anymore. Why do I call it a charade? Because the Democrats are trying to play gotcha politics right now.
This is Democratic Senator Cory Booker.
Clear, the speaker believes that their membership in the Republican caucus over there is so fragile that they cannot withstand simple debate, discussion about the topic of Jeffrey Epstein.
A heat dome covering much of the country, at least the middle and southern parts of it, the core of extreme heat over the Mississippi River Valley today, with feels like temperatures over 110 degrees in places like Memphis, Tennessee. This is ABC News.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. The State Bar of Wisconsin has agreed to settle a lawsuit filed by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty over its diversity, equity, and inclusion criteria. The conservative law firm filed the lawsuit in December of 2023, claiming the criteria was discriminatory for excluding individuals based on race. Under the settlement agreement, the State Bar of Wisconsin will now be required to remove race-based criteria from its programs, as well as revise its definition of diversity to exclude religion, sex, and other identity characteristics. Attorney General Josh Call has announced Wisconsin will join another multi-state coalition in a lawsuit against actions taken by the Trump administration. The new lawsuit seeks to halt efforts to impose new restrictions on essential health, education, and social service programs. The lawsuit argues that the additional restrictions put access to community services like Head Start, adult education, and community health centers at risk. The coalition is asking a federal court to declare the new rules unlawful and halt their implementation through injunctions. The Polk County Health Department has officially lifted the water advisory at South Twin Beach in Amory. The advisory was issued a couple of weeks ago after water from the beach tested positive for increased bacteria levels. Those bacteria levels have been tested within normal ranges in two consecutive samples since then, allowing the health department to lift the advisory. Residents swimming in the area should still remain cautious of increased bacteria levels, especially following heavy rains, as high bacteria levels can lead to skin irritation and rashes. The Minnesota Nurses Association at Ascensia Health in Duluth officially announced the end of their strike in a press conference outside the Ascensia Health St. Mary's facility on Tuesday. The strike began about 2 weeks ago, following months of negotiations between the nurses' union and the healthcare organization. Minnesota Nurses Association organizers say their decision to go on strike was based on unfair labor practices, including chronic understaffing and the failure of the healthcare organization to take their input on patient care needs into consideration. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers open camp. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports in Green Bay, where the Packers training camp got started this morning. Competition for jobs on the roster. Rashid Walker knows he'll be competing for his job, even though he was the starting left tackle all last season.
You know, the NFL, we have a long offseason, so I've been itching to just get back and just, you know, prove myself once again. I feel like that mindset could be contagious to the rest of the team. And, you know, if everybody's clicking on the same page, I feel like we can do great things this year.
Baseball. The Brewers losing to the Mariners in Seattle 1-0. Cal Raleigh, with his 39th home run of the season, he leads the major leagues. Pat Murphy asked, why did he pull his starting pitcher, the Miz, Jacob Mizorowski, out of the game halfway through the fourth inning?
The kid knows we've got his best interests in mind, and we're going to try to do everything we can to keep him away from any situations that could lead to overuse or putting him in danger of exposing himself or getting hurt.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have a chance of showers and thunderstorms with some locally heavy rain and the potential for a few strong to severe storms later today into tonight. Hail and wind, even an isolated tornado or two possible. Be weather aware later today and tonight. Our high this afternoon, 83. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
Outside now, it's 75.
Matt Nair on Air.
Corrine Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Corrine, about the need for child care in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt Nair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at mda75.org.
Jane, Matt, and Aaron, Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Matt Rothschild is sliding into the seats here at Radio Park in Racine. We will be back with you on Thursday. Join Matt. Going to be a great show.
Matt and Aaron on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH. Hayward's home for Matt and Aaron on Air.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back. 7:06. Nice to have you here. Broadcasting today and tomorrow from Civic Media HQ in Madison, along with Parker Olson, right here in Madison Studio A2. Here's visual proof for folks watching on social media. This room really is big enough for the two of us.
Not by much.
But not by much at all. In fact, we could not possibly fit meteorologist Brittany Merlot in here, which is fine because she is in Oshkosh. She is roughing it in the elements. And Brittany, I've looked at the radar long enough to know the elements are headed your way. How are you?
Yes, they are. Good morning, everyone. I am fantastic so far. Woke up to a text alert here at Oshkosh EAA Air Venture saying, hey, listen up. We've got rain headed here. It's going to be starting around 7 a.m., lasting for about 3 hours or so. So that's what we've got here. We're still under the heat advisory as well, but a good chunk of the state from Eau Claire to Green Bay and everyone south is under that heat advisory today. We are climbing to the mid-80s to mid-90s, and it's going to be feeling like 100 to 105 degrees today. So we've got a lot of things going on. We've already got the warm front moving in, rain rolling through a good chunk of the southern half of the state. Nothing severe, but a few power outages caused from it. I'm not seeing any high wind reports just yet, but a lot of lightning strikes with this rain that rolls through. And it's kind of got a cool front as it moves in. It's like that shelf cloud, that spaceship look as it comes into the area. So that's what I woke up to this morning. A little bit of light drizzle, and now it's just cloudy and starting to get a little bit humid. So we've got chances of rain this morning, a little break in the afternoon, but I do think these strong to severe storms are going to start to spark up around 2 o'clock far northwest Wisconsin. Some of those, of course, could be strong to severe. And then the line builds around 6 p.m. and works its way through the northern part of the state. It kind of fizzles out as it moves south. So the tornado threat is going to be just north of Wausau into Hayward, Eau Claire, Rhinelander area this afternoon. And high wind threat kind of stretches a little bit further south and towards La Crosse and just north of Green Bay. But of course, areas throughout the entire state down in Milwaukee and Madison, you could still see some high winds and some heavy downpours with this system moving in. It's going to be a pretty big line later on this evening. So round one isn't too bad, but round two is going to get much worse.
Well, and round one, I mean, it's nothing to shake a stick at watching it go through the Madison area. I was not aware that it was coming when it was getting ready in my spacious palatial hotel room in the Madison suburbs today. And then just as I opened up the curtains to get set to walk out for the day, I see it's just starting to pour. I'm thinking, if only I had looked at Brittany's notes a little earlier, I would have known to get out of the hotel earlier. But anyway, I stole this towel from the hotel room. I'm good. I'm covered. I got
to cover your head.
Got to remember to bring that back. And you take care out there as well. You got all kinds of people. You got gear. You got weather coming your way. So, and then by the way, you're going to be taking tomorrow and Friday just as personal days to continue to enjoy all that, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Yes. I know it's going to be pretty crazy weather, so I'm going to have to be staying dry myself, and I want to get in there and have some fun. So I will be back on Monday.
Oh, no, that is just fine. Robin Tigerton asks, did you do any flying at the EAA yet?
Not yet. See, this is why I needed some PTO. I'm going to get out there and social media. That's where I'll have all those videos for you guys.
Oh, that's fabulous. He says, good morning from Tigerton. Partly cloudy and 70 degrees yesterday. Mowed 5 yards in Tigerton. No mowing today because he has a doctor's appointment. He said, when I was a kid, I remember some of the hottest days of the year. We'd be baling hay or in high school at the beginning of football practice. We played Alison Krauss in our last segment and said his favorite song is When You Say Nothing at All. And, of course, notes the heat advisory is basically the Highway 29 corridor and south. I mean, it is a big old chunk of the state that's going to be both hot and stormy today. So we can no longer say you haven't been warned. Brittany was here to tell you, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. You guys stay cool, stay hydrated, and stay safe tonight.
Exactly. You as well. We'll talk to you a little later. Thanks, Brittany.
Thank you.
All right. As always, we'd love to have you as a subscriber to our Up North News daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com, and we have a Sunday morning newsletter that focuses more on the political news of the day, including a question of the week about early advertising. And if you see early advertising from somebody trying to build their name ID, does that make you respect their initiative, or does it turn you off to have such early political ads running this far in advance of a campaign? Again, you can always send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, to send an email. You can also, of course, text us through the Civic Media app, or you can send us a voice note. Just use that voice note feature when you call up one of the stations on the Civic Media app. Put a little recording on there, and we may play it here on air. Well, the Brewers' 11-game win streak came to an end. It did not go to 12 games. There will not be free hamburgers unless you head over to Parker's place. He likes to grill. He'll make you up a little something as you, cry in your beer about the Brewers not being able to reach that 12-game plateau. They lost 1-0 to the Seattle Mariners on a Cal Raleigh home run. It was... You know, it ended not with a bang, but a whimper, I guess you could say, the 11-game winning streak.
Yeah, not as bad of a whimper as the Phillies won the other day. Did you see this? They won on a catcher's interference.
Yeah.
That is the saddest win I think I've ever seen.
It is, but I mean, it is what it is. I mean, catchers can't put your mitt there where they can swing the bat, so don't do it with the bases loaded. It'll bite you, as it did. But the Brewers lose, but they will wrap up that series in Seattle this afternoon. Pregame starts at 2 o'clock on several Civic Media stations, 205 to be specific, for that game. And then the Brewers are off tomorrow. And then they start a three-game series Friday at home against the Marlins, and then the Cubs come to town next Monday. So when I mentioned Bill Berrien, the candidate for governor, running ads early, it's because he's got to build up his name ID. He's not an elected official. Other elected officials don't have to worry about that. They don't have to spend money yet. In fact, they can raise more money right now as a result. And that takes us to Tom Tiffany and headlines, including one in the Milwaukee Journal, that read, Congressman Tom Tiffany teases a run for Wisconsin governor but says he hasn't made up his mind. Okay, that's fine, but he put signs out there when we talk about teasing, like he recently tweeted out a photo of himself, you know, holding a crappie and saying that all future Wisconsin gubernatorial candidates must prove they know how to hold a fish. And he, of course, says, purchase the website domain name TomTiffanyForGovernor.com, which leads directly to his congressional campaign site. The homepage labels Tiffany, quote, a proven conservative for Wisconsin. You know, not northern Wisconsin. He's got the whole state lumped in there. And when asked by the Journal Sentinel, Tiffany told the newspaper he'd make his decision, quote, after July. Now, of course, he's not the only candidate who might yet run still. There is State Senate President Mary Felskowski, There's former Senate candidate Eric Hovde. There's former Senate candidate, governor candidate Tim Michaels, and Tiffany as well. In putting those signs out there, what is it that we're supposed to read into this? Well, as somebody who's been involved in this little game, let me explain the game. Fundraising is no fun. There's nobody that puts the fun in fundraising, despite the old joke. It is a long, hard slog of asking people to support your campaign because you're the candidate that best reflects their values and who wants to get things done. And so you sit there hour after hour after hour, either making phone calls or attending fundraisers or planning fundraisers, because this is the system that we have right now to raise funds to be a viable candidate. So how could you gin up that fundraising? What could juice up the donors a little bit? Well, one of those ways would be to get people excited that you are looking at bigger and better things coming up ahead. And as much as I love to tell people that you should not lump both parties together, you know, the both sides do it, both parties do it about a lot of things, this ain't one of them. This is one where both parties very much look for anything that provides a fundraising edge. And if that includes teasing a potential run that you're probably not going to make, but it gets some people excited, well, chances are you're going to put that out there. And I have seen people from both parties do this over the years. And I would not call it wrong. I would not call it even unethical. I would call it an unfortunate part of the fundraising landscape that's out there. We have had members of Congress from both parties who have multiple times teased a potential run for governor or a potential run for U.S. Senate, and or they just don't deny the rumors that are out there that they're thinking about running. And then when you look at their next campaign finance report, well, gosh, did they ever get a nice boost from people who thought, you know, that person might make a nice governor, or that person might make a nice senator. And it's just one of, you know, many tactics that are out there that Tony on YouTube best describes with the words money, 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 money. Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's not easy. It's something where you're looking for whatever will give you just that little bit of extra bounce. And in Tom Tiffany's case, it's that. Now, he may actually want to run for governor. He may be serious about it. All I'm saying is that he has absolutely no reason right now to tell you, no, I don't want to be governor. I'm perfectly happy where I am right now. He's in a district that he can get elected in over and over again. He can lob all the spitballs and verbal grenades that he wants at Democrats, knowing that he is safe. But if he had to run for governor, well, then he would have to defend some of the things about his record as a member of Congress, as a member of the state Senate. He would have to face questions beyond northern Wisconsin about why he wants to, dig up or bulldoze northern Wisconsin. This is the person who led the charge to get rid of the mining moratorium, the rules that said if you want to open a mine in Wisconsin, here's what you have to do. You have to prove that you have operated a mine somewhere else and closed it. And for years afterwards, you did not pollute the groundwater. If you've done those things, then you are welcome to apply to open a mine in northern Wisconsin. But if you can't do that, all evidence shows you're likely to pollute and harm the environment in northern Wisconsin. So no, thank you. But that law's not on the books anymore because of, as he's nicknamed up there, Toxic Tom Tiffany. And he has consistently been on the side of development and extraction and anything that would make the Northwoods a little bit less than what it is. Mary Felskowski, if she runs for governor, will be in that same vein of trying to tell people, you know, why it is that they want to pave paradise and put up a parking lot. But until that happens, Senate President Felskowski, Congressman Tiffany, and others can continue to let their voters know that they're intrigued by the idea. They're exploring the idea of running for governor. Then once they announce, well, the fundraising starts all over again, and they will have lost, you know, the edge that they're building right now while they're continuing to let the rumor mill do its thing. And it is really doing its thing right now until Governor Tony Evers makes an announcement one way or another. A local update is coming up next for some of you. And then when we're all back together in about 15 minutes, we are going to talk about declining enrollment and the reduction in state funding. Live here on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Pat Kreitlum.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
This is the story of the one. As a safety manager at a manufacturing plant, he does everything he can to keep his coworkers safe. From finding ways to reduce risks, to keeping safety supplies in stock. And for that, he relies on Grainger. Grainger offers a broad range of quality products and next-day delivery, so he can always play it safe. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In February of 2024, Governor Tony Evers signed new maps for the Wisconsin State Legislature into law, putting an end to one of the most extreme partisan gerrymanders anywhere in the country. While that was a momentous achievement for democracy in the state, that wasn't the end of the story. Since then, for more than a year, Fair Maps advocates and pro-democracy activists have been looking to take the next step and propose a new plan for independent redistricting in Wisconsin that would be here for the long haul. It's a compelling, well-constructed plan that would take the job of drawing maps away from the politicians who run for office on those very maps. In this new feature story, I take a closer look inside this citizen-led grassroots effort as it goes from the idea phase to being presented to the public. Because we absolutely need a long-term solution for redistricting reform in Wisconsin so we don't end up seeing either political party gerrymander Wisconsin's maps ever again.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Veterans, have you explored your benefits? The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs is here for Wisconsin veterans and their families. Please visit WISVets.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, with funding provided by the Milwaukee Brewers and the Brewers Community Foundation.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to Pat Kreitlow mornings here on the Buzz of the North, WBZH. Today we play our final segment with Jared Schutz of Wisco Dive Bar Reviews and a final delve into this crazy venture that he has had. Pick out one more for me. Give us one more in this week-long look at dive bars here in the Hayward and northern Wisconsin area. Pick out maybe another favorite of yours you can share with folks.
I mean, we could do another place with so much great history up there is the Sawmill in Sealy. I don't know if you've been to that place, but it's another place that's filled with history, and it's right on 63. And when you drive by it, you know that it's a unique place, and I had finally stopped in there for the first time about a year ago, and I got a tour from the owner, who was absolutely wonderful. And like it used to be an auto mechanic place back in the back, and it's been numerous things, and it's now just a giant bar with, you know, a bunch of seating, great food, and it's a historic place. You know, in northern Wisconsin, it's just a really, really unique looking place, and it's definitely worth a stop. If I know how many thousands of people drive by on Highway 63 any given Friday heading up north.
Yeah. Another unique thing, I think, Jared, too, about Wisconsin bars especially is we have a lot of specialty beers here. We have, of course, the New Glarus, which is a Wisconsin beer. And that's kind of a draw for tourists and other people, too, I think, is that unique experience with the beer, the beverage itself, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I wonder, on average, how many cases of spotted cow get smuggled back across Minnesota or Illinois or Iowa on a Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, exactly. We'll let the police handle that. So you're, again, people can find you on all the social platforms, Wisco Dive Bar Reviews. And here's a question I had when I was watching some of them over the weekend. Now, do you ever have a situation where you surprise people where you walk in? Or do you say, you know what, we're coming in and we're going to record? Or do you ever just kind of cold wing it and just kind of, let's see what happens here?
You know, a lot of the places I just wing it, because I may make my first stop of the day, and without me even knowing it, you know, I'll sit there and I'll chat with the locals, and they'll tell me about another amazing bar that's 3 or 4 miles away, and so then I kind of let them choose where I go next, and then I'll, you know, head to that place, and I just kind of, it's kind of just how it goes some days. And, you know, it's, I always go into a place. A lot of times, like my intro that you see, my intro is done before I walk in. And then I walk in. I'm always 100% respectful. Talk to the, you know, bartender, the locals. You know, I get recognized so much. So that helps. That helps too. But I always let people know, you know, what I'm doing before I do go back outside and come back in and, mm-hmm. and record again. I know there's a lot of people that absolutely love being on my videos, but, you know, at the same time, I know there's people that do like their privacy, and I totally respect that. And, you know, I have had, you know, a small amount of people just tell me they didn't want to be in the video, and I'm totally respectful and make sure I don't get them in the video. I said I do all the videoing, all the editing, everything myself. So if anybody shoots me a message on any one of my platforms, it's always me on the other end, 100%, and that's the way I always want to keep it.
Everybody has a story, Jared. I always say everybody has a story. When you go to one of these dive bars, there's a pretty decent chance that if you sit at the bar, you're probably going to hear somebody's, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's quite a adventure that it's taken you. So, so what's the future? Are you ever going to run out? Are you going to run out of dive bars, Jared? Do you fear that?
Boy, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know how many of them are considered dive bars, but according to Keith Kern, who is the Tavern League president, he tells me there's 9,000 bars in this state.
Oh, I think you're good.
So, I probably average, around 275 to 300 of them a year, and like at my current pace, it's gonna. Like I said, I'll hit bar number 1,000 in September is when bar number 1,000 is going to be. So it's going to take me, you know, just a shade under 4 years to do that. So it's going to take me 35 years to hit them all if that's what my goal is. I don't know. I take things day by day. You know, I plan things, you know, months in advance. But at the same time, I can't live Tuesday until I live Monday, and I can't live next weekend until I live this weekend. That's, you know, I try to. You know, big picture, but at the same time, you know, just one day at a time, you know, just
and
with
what,
everyday life. I think that's how we have to look at.
Yeah, and what brings dive bars together is it's not a small town or a big town thing. There's dive bars in downtown Minneapolis probably and in Siren. I mean,
right.
it's universal, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's, you know, they all kind of have that common denominator. You know, I feel like a true dive bar, I feel like, 20% of each bar is exactly the same, and then it's like kind of how it's decorated around that 20% is what makes it different, you know?
Exactly. Jared, well, we thank you for joining us all this week to talk about at Wisco Dive Bars, and you can go to the Wisco Dive Bar Reviews, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all that stuff. Millions and millions of views, good stuff. And just a great reference point, too, for people to find these places. So, Jared, continue along the path and telling people stories, and thank you for taking time to join us.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, too, I do have a website.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, I hit these bars, and people want to try to find where they're at. WiscoDiveBars.com is a thing. If you go on there, it will show a map of Wisconsin. Every bar location I've been to is pinned. And you can zoom into any area, whether it's Hayward or Park Falls or Phillips or Milwaukee. You can zoom in, click on any pin on the map, and it will pull up my video off of YouTube. And then there's also a big blue button that says navigate here, and it will give you GPS coordinates right to the bar. So So WiscoDiveBars.com is where to go for that. And it makes it a kind of a pocket hand, a handheld guide to finding all these great dive bars that I've been to.
Very cool. Jared, thank you so much for taking time to join us. Appreciate it very much.
I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you to Jared Schutz for being a part of our morning show here on the Buzz of the North, WBZH Wisco Dive Bar Reviews. More with Pat Kreitlow and all the great information that he provides coming up here in just a few moments. It is 7:29.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Our state agencies in Wisconsin now have a clear vision on the monies that have been granted to them through the state budget. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. And that includes Randy Romanski, our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection Secretary. He said he's very, very happy to see the monies that the state's investing in things like food security programs, county conservation staff, and animal health professionals. Within the state budget, money was allotted to provide 3 staff positions at the Department of Agriculture's Division of Animal Health to support potential animal disease outbreak coordination as well as response. He said that's not something happening in every state.
They're feeling the pinch in that they're having to reduce the size of their agency. And I understand government efficiency. I think our agency is pretty darn efficient. And I think other states have the same thing. I have great respect for my colleagues in other states, and they are trying to be a resource for agriculture. But some of them are in really unique funding situations where they're having a hard time being a resource to their industry because they don't have the people or they don't have the programs. Or, you know, there's one state where they wanted to apply for a federal grant to do something for agriculture, and they couldn't do it because they couldn't administer the grant. And, you know, that's a tough spot to be in.
Randy Romanski, our Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Romanski says that the budget that was granted to his agency by the state legislature and Governor Tony Evers goes to show that they recognize the breadth and significance of Wisconsin's $116 billion agricultural economy.
65 years ago, Bob Steffes built a legacy, one auction at a time. Today, Steffes Group carries on that tradition, delivering trusted service with integrity you expect. From the first conversation to the final bid, we're more than an auction company. We're your partner in sharing your legacy, because here, handshakes still mean something. Visit steffesgroup.com right now for information on auctions in your area, nationwide, and to find a local representative near you. That's steffesgroup.com.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
And the application period's now open for 2025 Wisconsin Leopold Conservation Award nominees. Those are landowners that inspire others to consider conservation opportunities on their land. Go to sandcountyfoundation.org and find the resources there. I'm Pam Yonke.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have a chance of showers and thunderstorms with some locally heavy rain and the potential for a few strong to severe storms later today into tonight. Hail and wind, even an isolated tornado or two possible. Be weather aware later today and tonight. Our high this afternoon, 83. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 75.
Matt and Air on Air.
Corrine Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Corrine, about the need for childcare in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media.
Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe,
the founder of Wonderfully Wisconsin. He's been on the show before, but tonight he's here to make the popcorn pick of the week. Mr. Paul Vandenplas,
the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Oh my God, I love when people pick a movie I know nothing about.
A campy comedy buddy story, really just a heartwarming message.
Paul picked a movie that I've never heard of that gets excellent critic and audience reviews. Very well done, Mr. Wonderfully Wisconsin.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe, weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwalbe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the founder of Wisconsinology.com and writer-producer Frank Anderson. Then, up-and-coming singer-songwriter Kaylin Cole joins me and gives us a sneak peek at her new single.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe, weeknights from 6 till 8.
We must have done something right there in that last segment Tony puts up on YouTube. I might have to listen to more Black Sabbath from that description. Well, that wasn't me. That was the Associated Press. But
you put it so eloquently.
I read it in a convincing fashion.
Yeah, like a true radio man. You know how to read.
Yes, that's right. Left to right, top to bottom. I've got this all figured out. In today's homeroom segment, let's start with a report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, a nonpartisan think tank, and their newest edition, their newest study, says Wisconsin education spending falls further behind the national average, noting that Wisconsin spent just shy of $15,000 per pupil on public elementary and secondary education in the 2022-2023 fiscal year, the most recent year for which the U.S. Census Bureau data is available. That was about 10% less than the national average of $16,500. When adjusted for inflation, Wisconsin pre-K-12 education spending per pupil has increased very slightly since 2002, just 2.5%. In 2002, Wisconsin spent about $14,000 per pupil in inflation-adjusted numbers, whereas the national average has gone up a little bit more than 2.5% since 2002. It's gone up 21% since then, as other states recognize the importance of educating our children rather than declaring war on education in our state. The Wisconsin Policy Forum report goes on to say this continues a long-running decline in our state's rank for per pupil education spending, which back in 2002 was 11th in the nation. Wisconsin ranked 7th out of 12 states in the Midwest in 2023, compared to first among Midwestern states back in 2002. When statewide education spending is measured as a share of all residents' combined personal incomes, Wisconsin also has been on a long-term decline. In the 2000s and early 2010s, Wisconsin spent a significantly larger share of personal income on education compared to the national average. This share declined to roughly match the nation for a period prior to the pandemic. In 2023, however, that share increased nationally but continued to decline in Wisconsin. And the intro ends with saying, these figures are the latest example of a decades-long shift in our state's investment in public education and state and local tax burden relative to its peers. Observing them is particularly timely as state policymakers recently enacted the state's next two-year budget, of which K-12 education is the largest spending priority for the state. And that's as it should be. K-12 spending should be a high priority for the state. It still takes up a significant chunk of the budget, but much less so compared to the part of investment that was being made by other states. And when you get to the part about education spending as a percentage of combined personal income, that's what's called the tax burden. And the tax burden has gone down and down and down. And in the beginning, when it first started to decline, you could clearly hear politicians saying that that was a good thing in their book. And it has continued to fall to the point where if I were to say to you that funding education is no longer a significant tax burden, people, of course, would rightly say, well, that's crazy. Of course it's a tax burden. It's still the biggest part of the state budget. But in terms of it being a percentage of the taxes that you pay and as a percentage of the income that you get, the tax burden for our schools has gone down and down and down. And it has come with a price, with declining enrollment as students move into other schools, and in the loss of our best and brightest as our young people leave the state and go to raise their kids elsewhere, and as some of our educators leave the state in the wake of Act 10 in order to, again, pursue their career elsewhere. So the Wisconsin Policy Forum takes a very dispassionate look at the numbers and shows the degree to which, since Republicans took control of the legislature, we have made the education of our children less and less of a priority. That is eating your seed corn in a state like Wisconsin. And our original hope this segment was to talk to a business manager and a school board member about the impact of declining enrollment on state aid. And that's because it's very tempting to think, well, if enrollment goes down, well, then, yeah, state aid should go down as well, right? I mean, that only makes sense. It would seem on its face. But there are all kinds of fixed costs that stay fixed, even if there's a decline in enrollment. If you've got 30 kids in the classroom and then it drops to 20 kids in the classroom, the electric bill for the lights in that classroom are still going to be the same. If the buses still have to take the same bus route, even if they're stopping at fewer houses along the way, the cost of gas to fill up that tank is going to stay the same. And so declining enrollment should not be accompanied by a one-to-one decline in state aid. And there are ways in the state budget where there are other little pools of money besides general state aid that help school districts with that. But none of this in total has kept up with inflation for 16 years. And it's why you see this parade of referendums around Wisconsin, and why you're going to see them even after this new state budget. Because although it makes a significant increase in state aid to special education, which did take up a big chunk of all local school districts' budgets, but the zero increase in general aids means that in terms of inflation, school districts are going to continue to fall behind and are going to continue to have to go to referendum. Jimmy Koska is familiar with this particular phenomena, being a school board member himself, and knows a thing or two about how many school districts have passed referendum over the past 4 years. Jimmy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I come on and I usually come here to talk sports, but yes, I do. I'm in my fourth year as a school board member in my district in southwestern Wisconsin. So spent a lot of time, looking at referendums. Our district passed one 2 years ago, which is actually just wrapping up work this summer. So we're one of 245 districts in the state out of the 421 that have passed a referendum in the past 4 years. And since they put in the revenue limits, 3 decades ago, over 90% of districts in Wisconsin have gone to referendum, have passed a referendum. And you think about that, and that's, nine out of it's every 10. There's a lot of districts in Wisconsin, 421 of them, of course. And then you think about schools that go to operational referendum, which are literally there to help pay the bills, pay expenses, keep the lights on, as you were talking about, the fixed costs, the things you can't, that can't go away. And when schools pass those, what they're saying is we have a perpetual hole in our budget that we can't fill with what we can bring in right now in our tax levies. So there are a lot of school districts that are working off of an operational referendum, which is, again, a perpetual hole in the budget, really due in part just to the fact that the funding system in Wisconsin for education has gotten so weird. So it is a very large number of districts in Wisconsin that have done referendum.
I like weird. Weird seems to be a good way to describe it. Could you describe when you were a new school board member, what it was like having to learn the way that education is paid for in the state, that it's not just a matter of, well, here go the property tax bills and here's how much we're going to get, and that it's a little bit more than that.
It felt kind of like sitting in, you ever see the any crime show where they have the big board and they got, yes, the suspects all tacked up on the board and you got lines and yarn drawn from one point to, that's what it felt like for me anyway.
It does.
There's a lot. I spent time myself diving into it with WASB, which is the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, and then going to the State Education Convention to really take a deep dive into it and learn as much as I could about it, especially knowing that we were going to referendum. I wanted to understand it. Like, why is this a need? Why is this happening even where, like, where I live? And it's really complicated. There's a lot of things that go into it. I think one thing that you started talking about here in this segment, Pat, you were talking about kind of the tax burden, right? The tax burden in the Wisconsin policy form analysis has dropped. One thing that has also dropped and one that has changed is just in general, Wisconsin public support for, you know, whether they would fund education or would they rather see tax breaks. That flipped about 3 years ago in the Marquette University Law School poll. So there's also a public perception that people feel like they're being taxed too much. You know, property taxes, and it's not just schools. I mean, there's municipal, there's county, there's all the extra fees and things associated. So in a vacuum, yes, school funding, a lower tax burden, but, you know, there's a lot of things going on beyond that. And we've seen our state legislature try to address not only education, but also municipal funding in the last state budget 2 years ago. There's so many moving parts to it. And then you have to figure it all, how it all comes out on your tax bill. And that's what we sit in a school board meeting and try to, you know, determine every year at an annual meeting. Like, what is our impact on our local tax base? What's the mill rate? You know, what happens if we do this? What if the if the referendum passes, what's the impact? How much of the referendum is part of what we're levying from local taxpayers? There's so many moving pieces. I can't even say I figured it out in 4 years, but I learned a lot about it and what actually goes all into it. And that's really helped me understand kind of why we're at and why. I've also, Pat, on a lot of these shows, talked about it as, hey, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done in regards to how we fund education in Wisconsin.
And the thing is, this is something that has been discussed for decades, quite literally, and that some years back, I forget exactly how many years now, but during the Walker administration, there was a Blue Ribbon Commission that was formed, a bipartisan group, to come up with, you know, a better mousetrap. And the Blue Ribbon Commission, made up of Democrats and Republicans, did their best, put forward some proposals. And if you really want to see educators who work on this issue get steamed, it's that there's this notion that after all was said and done with this Blue Ribbon Commission, so very little of it has been put into place.
And the other thing that happened, and this is what I think has really been the greatest impact to education funding in Wisconsin, is it also, in that span, decoupling the rise in per pupil aid from inflation has really made a big impact. If you look at any school referendum graphic, they invariably will show you just the gap, the widening gap of what, you know, if we hadn't decoupled from inflation, what school funding would be now compared to, you know, how it is because it was decoupled from that. So now, you know, state aid might not go up for a couple of years like it won't now. Like, there's the general aid doesn't change, right? So there's a graph that shows just the widening gap of where school funding would have been had, you know, the old system stayed in place during the Walker administration, right? So now that's the gap schools are trying to make up. And that's also kind of the gap you're seeing where in Wisconsin where you see that the per pupil funding had it stayed on the old system coupled to, you know, tied to the inflationary measure, where we would still be where we were in the rankings, you know, 15 years ago with that. But instead, because it's been decoupled, now that per pupil education funding has really dropped off.
And by the way, that decoupling was done when Democrats were in control. I was one of those people that voted for it. And there was a reason why. The Great Recession had just started. And we were facing a $3 billion hole and said, you know, the money just isn't there to keep up with inflation this year. So let's take a pause this cycle. Republicans took control the next year and never hooked the train back up. And we've been falling behind inflation ever since. A local update is next for some of you. Others will stick around. And Jimmy and I will continue our conversation here. And then we'll have much more in our 8 o'clock hour live from Madison today. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Connecting audiences, powering brands.
This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 Highway 63 Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In May, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that individuals, in this case Native Americans, do not have a private right of action in voting rights cases. An emergency stay was granted July 22nd, and it's likely headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. In 2021, the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians, the Spirit Lake Tribe, and individual Native voters negotiated with the state of North Dakota to create voting districts that didn't dilute Native voting power. But after a 2023 Eighth Circuit decision in Arkansas, the state of North Dakota reneged on its deal with the tribes. That decision said only the U.S. Justice Department, not individual voters, could bring suits to enforce the provisions of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. In actuality, since 1965, individuals brought 90% of VRA cases. May 14th, a three-judge panel affirmed that individual voters cannot bring VRA cases, but it applies only in the Eighth Circuit. July 15th, the tribes and individual Native voters asked for an emergency stay from Justice Brett Kavanaugh, pending a full U.S. Supreme Court appeal request. The stay was granted July 16th. On the one hand, decades of precedent allow individuals to bring such VRA cases, but this high court's conservative majority often ignores precedent and seeks ways to neutralize VRA protections for minority voters. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Veterans, have you explored your benefits lately? As in, really looked at them? Veterans who bravely served our country deserve the benefits they've earned and life-saving support when they need it. We know that no one can do this alone, and we're stronger when we work together. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs stands ready to serve Wisconsin veterans, their families, and their survivors. With our network of partners, like your local county Veterans Service Officer, we can help connect veterans with services such as education, employment, mental health services, veteran ID, long-term care, and more. We stand ready to serve you. For more information, call 1-800-WIS-VETS or visit WISVETS.com. That's WISVETS.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, with funding provided by the Milwaukee Brewers and the Brewers Community Foundation.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We have more Mornings with Pat Kreitlow coming up in just a moment here on a Wednesday edition on the Buzz of the North. Good to have you with us. Joel here. Gray is showing some interest over there on an early Wednesday morning. How we doing? We're all here. You never know what you're going to hear when Gray and I get together here on the Buzz of the North in the morning. I guarantee you will hear quite a bit of Packer talk and stuff as we get into the season, so we'll save that for them. But today, Gray, I wanted to talk a little bit about libraries today. Libraries are something that, you know, when the internet came along, everybody kind of said, oh, that's it for libraries. That was fun. Everything's digital. Everything's online. Good time. Yeah, goodbye. But libraries have transformed. We've got a lot, so many events going on right here in Hayward at the public library. But they've really kind of transformed into almost like community centers in a lot of towns where they bring in a lot of programs, a lot of meeting rooms. So that transition for libraries has been pretty cool to watch.
Well, I mean, and something that I know a lot of our listeners here in particular, as we pop up and steal some time from some of the awesome hosts on the Civic Media Network, I know a lot of people here will be familiar with the idea that, yeah, libraries are that free third space that largely doesn't exist anymore. You know, our parents, your generation,
those before, certainly, they had options for not school, not home, and not paying for wherever they went. Even if, yes, you pay for gas, but just cruising around in the car when gas was cheap, the gas is nominal. So you've always got somewhere you can be without money up front. And I know, like, I'm going to get this reputation, Joel. These people are going to think, this is the guy that always talks about money and capital. He doesn't talk about politics, but I can smell it on him. Yeah, you can, but I'll tell you what, I've got a very normal up north guy's perspective on how that relates. And that, I think, is, I think Joe the Plumber's perspective matters a lot.
Yeah, there's so many things at libraries. If you have kids or grandkids and you haven't use the library as a reference for kids for education, entertainment, books, obviously, too, internet, if that's something that you need it for. But they do a lot of informative things. They have some nature stuff going on at the library. In fact, today here in Hayward, and I know they bring in a lot of just a variety of things that if you're missing out, if your kids and grandkids aren't referencing what's happening at the library every once in a while.
No, I mean, it is a portal to the rest of the world if you know how to treat it. You know, you walk up, I picture every sci-fi movie ever. It's clearly a door. It's big. It's made of metal. It's 10 foot tall. It's 3 foot wide. But how do we activate it? Well, you go and you ask the librarian nicely for a card and ask for some pointers, and they will happily show you how to unlock the world slowly over time. Teach you how to learn.
Yeah.
I mean, and a librarian is not just a desk attendant, is not just a cashier for late fees. That is a wizard.
That's very true.
That if somebody carries the title of librarian, that's a wizard.
Yeah.
That is the hat is just catch them in the right light, you'll see it. Librarians are wizards. Shout out to every librarian ever, truly.
And there's something special for people who enjoy reading. There is something special about holding a book. I don't think there's one person that reads a lot that doesn't at some point go back and forth between maybe their pad, iPad, and an actual physical book. Right?
Yes. Well, I know. And the funny thing is, I bet there's a lot of people out there who couldn't necessarily tell you why a worry stone is a helpful thing, but could absolutely tell you why a heavy paperback feels nice. And it's like, I'm pretty sure those might be the same. Like just that reassuring weight. And it's a shape that just kind of, that's a worry stone. Yeah. Your book is your worry stone.
There's just something about books in your house, whether it's in your den or your bedroom or that shelf that has the books on it. There's just something still about, I don't know what it is, but there's something tangible about that, right?
It's inarguable. I don't care if you're rich. I don't care if you're poor. I don't care what the books are about. If you've got a shelf full of literature, especially if there's any soft spines that look well-worn, you absolutely look more approachable. I mean, that's what they say if you're snooping in someone's house, check the bookshelf to learn about them, the bookshelf and the medicine cabinet, though that's less true now than ever before with the Kindle doing all the work. But I still think that remains true. Regardless, though, if you see the bookshelf, that tells you one big thing that I'm not even sure I can put into words. It's just, this person reads, this person thinks, this person will have a discussion probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's an old term. You can't throw an iPad at somebody, but you can throw the book at them. throw the book at him.
That judge threw the iPad at that poor guy.
Then he had to go spend $500 to get a new one.
Bill Belichick threw some iPads, but they weren't iPads. They were Microsoft Surface tablets, which he chucked firmly.
Always goes back to football. Here
we are. It's me.
And there's one other thing about libraries, too. They hold a lot of local history. There's a lot of microfilm. I think they call it microfilm. But there's a lot of history of area newspapers, of magazines from towns that don't exist any other place except local libraries a lot of times.
Right. Actually, that's I've talked to a couple people about that thing we've got, and it sounds silly, but hanging in our bathroom, that old Playbill program from some part of the 60s for one of our sister stations. And it's like, what would I do if I wanted to hear? You know, it's such an easy thing to think. How could I listen to that radio that came out of the Northwoods in the 60s? You can't. It's gone. Nobody recorded it unless it's on a reel somewhere. I mean, unless somebody did archive it in some way.
Yeah.
There's no, like, everything we do now saves itself by default. You know, there's just so much digital storage to speak of, and it wasn't like that. But the local library, you go there, you find everything you need to know.
Yeah, I've been in radio all my life, and that's one thing I envy about newspapers, is that they archive things better than radio did. A lot of our radio audio is gone.
Exactly.
Unless somebody recorded it. Newspapers, They're there. They're, a lot of them are still there in certain places. So you darn newspaper people.
I read just enough sci-fi to think that hopefully one day we find some obscure super technology that lets us catch radio waves that are bouncing off of distant planets or something. You know, like, I mean, Wolfman Jack's still beaming out there into space.
Somewhere.
He's really somewhere. Fuzzy by now. He's been filtered through a couple planets and asteroids and things. But hey, maybe we could hear the Wolfman live 30 light years away.
Yes, a little naturalist. At the Hayward Library. That's going on today. And it starts at 10 o'clock, runs to 11:30. They have, they talk about wind, water, animals, all kinds of stuff. There's so much. Check with your local library, especially right here in Hayward. Some good stuff. Thank you, Gray.
My pleasure.
Have a great Wednesday. More of Pat Kreitlow coming up in just a moment. It is 7:59.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Today is sentencing day in the Idaho College murders case as Brian Koberger comes face to face with the victims' families. How much we actually hear from Koberger himself is still unclear, says ABC legal analyst Shauna Lloyd.
The judge can compel Koberger to admit his guilt. He also can ask him additional questions if the judge feels as though it's warranted. We know that the family is looking for a lot of answers, such as motive and other things. Those are not typically things that they will find out at this type of hearing.
Koberger expected to be sentenced to 4 consecutive life sentences. The Justice Department saying now it wants to talk to Jeffrey Epstein's convicted co-conspirator Ghislaine Maxwell as members of Congress continue pushing the Trump administration to release everything it has on the case. Hunger worsening in Gaza as Israel's blockade of aid continues. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff headed to Rome for talks as the U.S. tries to reach a ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. This is ABC.